Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4033 of the world's leading and only audio newspaper for a visual world, The Bugle, or for those of you listening in Morse code. And if you're listening in semaphore, this is... If you are one of our many listeners who are aquatic mammals, welcome to... Thank you, Finian Blower. Have some herring. I am Andy Zaltzman. Please, that's lovely of you to say so, but you're embarrassing me now. And I'm here in London. Whether you like it or not, I imagine you're probably ambivalent to that fact. And joining me from the biggest of all the apples, New York City, it's a big welcome back to Hari Kondabolu.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How have you been? It's been a few months since... You were last on this show.
I mean, look, every day we're all still around. You gotta be happy for that. You know, right. Trump being president, it makes me take a stock in things. Like, it makes me value every day like it was my last day.
So that's made you appreciate life more. I mean, these are the benefits of the Trump years that the mainstream media never tell us about.
No.
All these people, you know, finding themselves, finding the true meaning of existence. You know, it wouldn't have happened if he hadn't so gloriously won that election.
Oh, yeah, I totally wouldn't. I mean, it's strange to be this optimistic. I think it's also a slow acceptance of death.
Oh, right, okay.
And coming to terms with the fact that none of us are going to be around that much longer in the grand scheme of things. And who am I to be depressed about that? So, right. You know, I live my life... talking, saying random things. At the point, it doesn't matter. I can say whatever I want. What's going to happen?
And how have you filled the month since your last appearance on the Bugle?
I did some touring, which again, you know, when I used to tour, I'm like, oh, this is great for the long-term career, building a fan base, you know, getting people to buy my album, and now it's a way to say goodbye to a lot of people.
Right.
People I wasn't sure if I was going to see again.
Right.
And now I get to go to all these different cities and say goodbye to them, perhaps meet the children that I haven't met because I tour so much. I don't, like, oh, you had a kid, you got married, I had no idea. And then I could say hello and goodbye at once. I mean, it's nice.
That's a lovely way of putting it. This is Bugle 4033. 4033, coincidentally, the number of people it takes to change 4033 light bulbs simultaneously. also, interestingly, 4033 is the number of spoons you would have to melt down in order to have enough spoon metal to make a new single spoon big enough to stir a shark tank at an aquarium if you filled it with tea. That is a scientific fact. This is the Bugle for the week beginning Monday, the 19th of June, 2017. On the 18th of June, 1812, 205 years ago, the US declared war on the UK. I want an apology for that, Hari. That's unacceptable behaviour. It was the start of the War of 1812, as it was spectacularly called. Good tactics, that. Try and keep it short to one. I mean, it didn't work. It went on until 1815, but better than the Hundred Years' War, which kind of inevitably then lasted over 100 years.
In all fairness, Andy, at that time, my ancestors, I believe, were being subjugated by your ancestors.
Ah,
so,
right.
You know. So
yeah.
Maybe the apology should be coming from the other end.
Look, I think we've been through this before. If we in Britain start apologising, that will open up a dam that may never again... be secured. We have to bottle it up. It's what we do in Britain. The War of 1812, according to the USA, was a victory for the USA. According to Canada, was a victory for Canada. And according to Britain, was a minor little hoo-ha, equivalent to a gentle stramash at a church fete over a rogue biscuit. But from that emerged the American National Anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, written, I believe, in 1814, which translated into modern English, essentially just says... you, Britain. So it's always lovely to hear. On the 16th of June, 1723, Adam Smith was born, the celebrity Scottish economist. Not so interested in the invisible hand back then, of course, the newborn economist, more interested in the visible tit. But it is thought that the 294-year-old Wealth of Nations star is rumoured to be on the verge of a surprise comeback from beyond the grave with a new theory on the impact of unbridled free markets on social equality. His new theory called the invisible headbutt. This week, a natural world food accessories section. Now, of course, natural eating is all the rage these days, and we review the latest eating gadgets in which humanity has learnt from the natural world to be able to eat better. We look at the latest range of Wailables. That's a terrific company. Their new baleen filters that enable us humans to eat plankton au naturel when we go swimming in the sea. We review the Tiger Gob steak tooth, which you just affix to your upper jaw to maximise your meat-tearing capabilities. Now comes in the full range of carnassial, canine and prehistoric sabre. The BirdTech Pasta Beak, modelled on the proven avian worm-pecking technology, the beak. You simply clip the pasta beak onto your face and get stuck into your bowl of spaghetti. Also suitable for regurgitating linguine into your children's waiting mouths. The Boviax Multitum, what works for the cow, works for the now. One of the great catchy slogans of the modern marketplace. In today's health-conscious, vegan-influenced food era, the Multitum gives you the tried and tested quadri stomach enjoyed by a cow since time immemorial. To get every single plausible nutrient from those unappetizing leaves you feel obliged to eat these days. Free with the Multitum comes a Ruminatics pre-chew vegetable grinder to get that initial mulching phase up and running. And also, we review the Insectic Chunder Ketchup. If it works for the flies, it works for the wise. Start pre-digesting your food by learning from the humble housefly's Bauk marinade technique of vomiting all over its food with this new carrot-flavoured acidic puke sauce. Just a couple of squirts of Chunder Ketchup will start breaking down even the most unappetizing of meals so you can get yourself inutriated at incredible natural speed. That section in the bin. Top story, America updates. And, well, as I said, it's been a few months since Hari has been on the show. And while we've not covered absolutely everything that's happened in America in that time, we're almost half a year into Trump's first term of the three he's got planned. I mean, he's got FDR written all over him. And it is increasingly hard to keep up with the constantly spewing volcano of fury, embarrassment and confusion that is the Trump presidency. He is very much the untrainable political puppy that keeps shitting on its own sofa. Now, Hari, can you possibly explain absolutely everything that's happened in the Trump administration since you were last on the show, and in particular his little spat with the former FBI head honcho, James Comey?
No, I cannot.
Oh, right, okay. I mean, I was fully relying on you to explain literally everything, because I missed a couple of days of it, and it's really hard to catch up.
Luckily, Donald Trump documents every day. By documents, I mean tweets. So you can have a quick summary of where things have been. I think in summation, based on the tweets, things aren't good. But if you want to know about the Comey thing, this is my understanding, which, again, is steeped in a lack of understanding.
The best kind of understanding.
Yes. So basically, there was an FBI investigation that James Comey, the head of the FBI, had about whether Russia obstructed in the U.S. election. And caught up in that was General Michael Flynn, who Trump had appointed for a position I cannot currently remember. it's, you know, the Trump people said they had no, like, there was no kind of interaction with Russia. There wasn't any kind of arrangements. There wasn't any interference. But all of a sudden, Flynn lied about the fact that he did have interactions with Russia, even though he, I think, believe, signed statements saying he didn't, but he actually did. And so things were starting to get kind of heated. There's also some talk about Jared Kushner, who is one of the president's main advisors, also his son-in-law, who has no political experience, possibly trying to set up a direct line with Russia, which is also not good.
Right.
While all this was happening, Donald Trump asked Comey, the FBI director, to leave Flynn alone. This actually, I think, is a quote. You know, Flynn's a good guy.
Right.
I mean, honestly, that sounds like a thing I made up, but I believe that is true. That is what he told head of the FBI to leave Flynn alone, because he's a good guy.
Right.
And
I mean, that should be enough, shouldn't it? From a president?
From a dictator, yes.
Right.
but at that point, Comey, I think, decided that since the FBI is an independent agency, it's supposed to be independent and, you know, should not be told what to do in such a way, that he was still going to press on with his investigation, you know, do his job and all. At which point, Trump did the most logical thing, which was to fire him.
Right.
He was firing the man who was investigating him.
Right. The most. That's the most logical thing. And as ever, he's handled matters with the tender delicacy of a rhinoceros midwife crash tackling a very pregnant flamingo. and this one thing that I struck me was Comey's statement saying this. The president said, "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty." And then Comey says, "I didn't move, speak, or change my facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. We simply looked at each other in silence." I mean, that sounds like a frankly horrific date or one of my early gigs on the stand-up circuit.
It's very honest. It paints a very vivid picture. I do not think that man is lying.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
I want to know how long that silence lasted for. I imagine that could have gone on for a full 95 minutes. Obstructing justice. I mean, do you think he's going to be found guilty of obstructing justice? I mean, he's certainly not over guilty of not obstructing justice.
Well, I think the two things that seem like obstructing justice is telling the person who is running an investigation to stop the investigation, which is would be then obstructing what some would call justice.
Yep.
The second thing that might be a hang-up is the person who was investigating all this was then fired by the investigatee. I'm not sure if that's a word. And that seems like an obstruction, like a clear, like, you're stopping because I'm firing you,
yep.
Obstructing you from doing your job because it's not your job anymore. So those are a couple of things. You know, it's funny, Andy, as we've discussed this, it's weird because I think for years people, when they've talked about governments in the Middle East or in the continent of Africa, would say things, you know, when there was a controversy regarding an election or people getting killed or fired, you know, they would say things like, well, you know, that's just how it works over there. And we're over there now. We're over there. America is the over there. In other American news, Megyn Kelly, who was recently hired by NBC News from Fox News, because that's clearly a good idea, decided to interview Alex Jones, who is very much a fringe figure in the U.S., a conspiracy theorist. Alex Jones publicly has said that he believed the 9/11 was a government conspiracy. He believes that Sandy Hook, which is the shooting that killed all those children in the elementary school, was actually, again, also done by the government, that they were actors. There's a lot of questionable things this man has said.
Well, it seems like you should call those questionable. Because
well, I'm trying to be impartial here.
Right, okay. Well, I admire the journalistic integrity you're bringing to this, because those theories are, they're not so much far-fetched as just firing a dog into space in a rocket and shouting, find a stick, good doggy.
Well, I would first say, can we interview the dog?
Right.
And see if that actually happened.
How prominent, because we talked a bit about the alt-right a few, and the word right just seems so wrong, a couple of months ago. How prominent is Alex Jones? His InfoWars website was granted a White House press pass earlier this year, which seemed, I mean, that's, in terms of ruthless journalistic factory, they seem to fall slightly below the ideal bar for people you want being given a press pass by the f***ing White House.
Yeah, but the rules have changed, Andy.
All right,
and I mean, it's not hard to get a press pass anymore. National Enquirer probably has a press pass. There are probably people who had GeoCities and Angel Fire web pages in the early to mid-90s who have... is that a thing, Andy? I don't even know if that's a thing in the UK. Is that a thing?
I mean, it sounds like a thing. You said it convincingly, so I'm going to go... Chris is nodding his head, so that is
okay.
That is a thing.
I mean, again, not the only people that don't, you know, have a tougher time getting press passes are anybody who's, like, you know, reporting news, but that's...
Right. What about Marvel Comics?
That's secondary. Marvel does, but DC doesn't, okay? So there's integrity. This is a fair question. I mean, Megyn Kelly's taking a lot of heat for interviewing this person. And my question is, what's the worst that can happen if you give a maniac media attention? Like, what are the possible long-term consequences? Name one possible consequence. One giant, unqualified, you know, deceitful consequence.
Right. You're basically saying Alex Jones is going to win the 2020 presidential election. Is that?
I mean, honestly, at this point, like, there was a time where you couldn't bet on that.
Right.
You could, but you really couldn't bet on that. And now, there's money in that. There is the possibility of making a major payday. Like, with $100, I could make, I could have made $1 billion, but now it's probably about $1 million. I could make about $1 million. One more little point about the story. So Alex Jones apparently audio recorded both the pre-interview and the interview on the sly and has released pieces of that, which show Megyn Kelly being very sycophantic, also lying to Alex Jones and saying that he would have final editorial control. And basically giving more context to things he said. Now, he still said a bunch of maniacal things, but it doesn't make Megyn Kelly look good at all. I mean, she already looked terrible for interviewing Alex Jones, but it kind of also destroys her big Sunday night interview with the maniac.
Right.
So,
see, my view
on one
this.
Hand, I'm happy that Megyn Kelly is, you know, being destroyed, and on the other hand, this isn't a good look for anybody.
My view of this is that the whole interview was a government setup, in which they are trying to showcase Alex Jones's idiocy in order to discredit other conspiracy theorists who are actually onto something.
I read that this morning too, actually. Did you read that on InfoWars?
Yeah, so it was on InfoWars, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it goes right to the top.
The more humorous American news, Fox News has changed its motto, which for years has been fair and balanced, to most watched, most trusted, which is a lie, which is consistent with the brand.
Could they not have just put ironic quote marks around fair and balanced?
Right. Or an asterisk.
Yeah.
Or an asterisk that just says Americans most gullible. I mean, there must be something.
Well, presumably one asterisk next to fair and a double asterisk next to balance.
Actually, I came up with some other options that I think they probably rejected. You know, well, they didn't reject them because I didn't propose them, but I think maybe more accurate. I thought instead of fair and balanced, perhaps they could have changed it to fair-skinned and balanced. That allows them to, it's less work. You just have to, you know, put an arrow with the word skinned.
Yep.
They could call it the news in question marks, or again in italics to indicate sarcasm, right?
Yeah.
Now with less O'Reilly, which could draw some more moderates over. Party like it's 1984. More festive. And the final option I had is, you want the truth, we can't handle the truth. So, all those potential slogans, not given a fair chance.
This is a very exciting moment for American news coverage. Apparently they've also dropped another slogan, we report, you decide. British election aftermath news now, and we recorded last week, Hari, within hours of the election here. In fact, this is, as I said earlier on, Bugle 4033, which is coincidentally the number of times at the first post-election meeting of her new cabinet that Prime Minister Theresa May said the words, "Can you all stop looking at me like that, please?" It's been an odd time in British politics, and again, it's been overshadowed by another horrific tragedy in London this week. And no one knows quite what is going on now. And yet, just a month ago, we seem to be looking at 1,000 years of Tory rule, essentially. That seemed to be what a lot of the newspapers were predicting, that basically it was the end of everyone else, and Theresa May was basically going to become the new Boadicea, but better. Now she's looking like she may not last. I mean, basically every minute is a bonus for Theresa May as Prime Minister at the moment. And people started to look back now on where it all went wrong. As campaigns go, the Conservatives' campaign was about as well thought out and executed as when renowned polar explorer Sir Piers Pluffer Duggarswick in the early 20th century turned up on the coast of Antarctica on a kid's tricycle with little skis strapped to the wheels, a tin of sardines and a pair of novelty underpants with a first bottom to the bottom of the world slogan on the arse, and started shouting at the penguins, "Free fish for whoever can tell me which way south is." It seemed to be about as that, as well planned as that. And just when he thought things couldn't get any worse for the British voting public, she brought back Michael Gove, the viral former Education and Justice Secretary, and he is now back in top-level politics, like a dog returning to a museum of its own vomit. It's been an interesting time. Did you follow our election at all? I mean, there's just been weird elections going on, it seems, across the world for about the last 3 years.
A little clarification. So Theresa May called for this election,
yes,
right? Just to kind of reinforce, with the idea that, you know, it would reinforce her stronghold.
Yeah,
and this appears, if correct me if I'm mistaken, this appears to be the same move that Cameron did with Brexit, which,
yes,
also backfired. Did the same thing that he had done. She doubled down on that idea of, I'm going to call an election to prove that this will work in my favor.
Yes.
That I am in charge.
Wow. Essentially, in successive years, we've had a Conservative Prime Minister playing a silly little game with the entire future of the nation and losing against apparently unsurmountable odds in favour of a win. You've got to admire the achievement. Frankly, if you could have set out to find a way of getting Britain to leave the European Union, or, you know, vote to leave the European Union, and then for the Conservatives to tank what seemed to be, as I said last week, an open goal of an election, I'm not sure anyone could have actually planned that deliberately. So to have achieved it accidentally is a frankly staggering performance. Where to now for the UK? The government's now relying on the Democratic Unionist Party from Northern Ireland, reigning and 25-time winner of the UK Political Party of the Year from the hardline, outdated Social Conservatism Monthly magazine, which is a slight concern for people who are not fans of hardline, outdated social conservatism. Various options on the table for us, Harry. Option one is just sitting in the corner quietly weeping at what we've done to ourselves over the past few years. Quite an attractive option, that, to be honest. Option two is another general election, but the Conservatives are not keen, having just failed to win what was a sitting duck of an election. And when you find yourself being body slammed by a sitting duck and you end up lying on the floor looking up at the duck, begging for mercy whilst it quacks in your face and threatens to wrap you in a Chinese pancake with some plum sauce, clearly things are not going too well for you. Option three is just do nothing much, just going to hang around and chill for a bit. That seems to be the government's preferred option right now. Theresa May has said, we now need a period of stability in this country, which is rather like someone who's just driven a bus off a cliff into a swamp, spluttering to the surface and saying, I'll tell you what this bus could really, really do with, and that is a period without anyone driving off a cliff into a swamp. And option four is just to activate the special button under the Queen's crown that turns her into a real monarch. Proper medieval style, suit of armour, massive sword, let's get back to British basics monarch. It's what the country wants. It's what the country needs.
Andy, your beautiful use of language almost makes things better.
Father's Day section now, and Sunday is Father's Day. Chris, you're a father. Are you geared up for the big day?
I'm flying away and leaving my family. I'm going to Cannes for the week. It's the greatest gift I could have asked for.
Are you going to be hanging out on yachts?
No.
All right.
I'm going to be in a hotel room.
All right, cool.
Working.
Glamorous.
That counts, yeah.
I will be celebrating Father's Day by going to the Champions Trophy cricket final and looking up statistics all day. It's what fatherhood is all about. But for any Bugle fathers out there, we are giving away 6 free pieces of audio fathering. Simply play these snippets to your children at the appropriate moments and guarantee a successful fathering bond for life. Kids, there is no tooth fairy. anymore. Got done for tax evasion. Bang to rights, I say. Not a f***ing penny. You want to know why your school doesn't have a trampoline? Look no further than the fairy. Hey, kids. Bad news about Santa. Looking at a 10 stretch for illegal employment practices, breaking and entering, trespass, DUI and anti-Semitism. No smoke without fire. So, you want to be an astronaut when you grow up? Well, it's a nice idea, but let's be realistic, more likely call center, or if you're lucky, barista. Although we'll probably be able to download coffee by then. World's different now, kid. Put your toy rocket down and play with that actual phone. Good question, kid. Why don't you f***ing look it up? There's a reason we've got Wi-Fi. Well, kid, you think things are shit now? Just wait until you're 120, begging for the merciful claw of the Reaper. That section in the bin. Oh, no, it's not that, is it? There you go. That is your complimentary Bugle Father's Day fathering guide. It is now time for the Not Sport Sports section. And, Hari, there's been some sensational competition in the world of not sports in America.
Well, first of all, I take offense to the characterization of the spelling bee as not a sport.
Right.
Okay. It is boxing of the mind, Andy.
Right.
These young people either have to memorize a ton of words, or if they don't know the spelling of word, decode it. By learning the roots of the word. Is it Latin? What kind of letters will be used if it was a Latin root or a Greek root or a Sanskrit root? That's incredible. That to me is sports. And Indian Americans happen to dominate this particular sport. I have coined a phrase. I call it the Indian Super Bowl.
Right.
we have a sports dynasty. 10 straight Indian American winners. 10 straight, Andy. That's like the Yankees or the Montreal Canadiens or the Boston Celtics. This is a dynasty, all right? That's rare in sports. And also, let's think about the fact that these are a colonized people, right? Indians are a colonized people by the British. We had to learn English. So not only do these kids come from that legacy, they dominate the English language. They know all the different spellings of the thing. I feel like if the UK had a spelling bee like this, I really do think that Asians in the UK would dominate as well.
I think you're probably... I mean, in Britain, I think we'd struggle to spell spelling bee, frankly. We might not make it past the entry form.
Andy, Indian Americans dominate the spelling bee the way white people dominate the American power structure. Right? That being said, does anyone want to trade? I am open to trade.
So, it's interesting. I mean, spelling bees aren't such a big thing here. But there's been a couple of TV shows over here, I think. But, I mean, even for my... competition-loving self, watching people spell words out loud on telly is that's one step too far. I'm interested to know that level of competition. Is there much trash talking? Do you see, some very well-structured and accurate trash talking between the competitors? Them saying you are an absolute bellend, B-E-L-L-E-N-D. Of course, I mean, every word of this audio newspaper, The Bugle, is spelled correctly. We take our responsibility to linguistic accuracy very seriously indeed. But also, it's interesting, as you say, that in America, the Indians dominate so much because there isn't cricket in America. And I've spent most of the last 3 weeks watching cricket in my other role as a cricket statistician. I've been to quite a few games involving India, also Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and it does make you think the amount of obsession that those Asian nations devote to cricket, when you remove cricket and leave them only with spelling, total world domination. And it does suggest what would India as a nation achieve if it ceased to spend all of its time watching cricket? And also, what do people who spend all their time watching cricket... What might, for example, someone like me, I don't want to go down this wormhole. I do not want to disappear down the what might have been of that train of thought. Let me derail that train of thought.
I haven't watched cricket in a long time, Andy. How is Sunil Gavaskar doing?
Well, I mean, he's here at the moment. He's doing TV for any Bugle listeners not familiar with the work of the former all-time Test match record run scorer.
Oh, he's not playing Sunil anymore.
Gavaskar. No, he played his last match for India in 1988, I believe.
Oh my God! How about Kapil Dev?
Retiring with 10,122 Test runs to his name, of course. Kapil Dev. When did he quit? Mid-90s, I would say.
Ah, jeez.
Kapil Dev, maybe 95.
How about that Australian bloke? What's his name?
Ned Kelly?
No.
Not really.
Donald Bradman.
Donald Bradman, very much out of the game these days. Bradman definitely lost his edge due to having died at the age of, 92, about 15 years ago. But there's no substitute for experience, so you'd still back him to do a job. And Australia didn't play that well in this tournament, so never say never. Is that you blown out of cricket references now?
Yeah, pretty much.
That Australian guy.
In other non-sport news, a European Court of Justice ruling has ruled that bridge, the card game, is a sport. To which the obvious response is, no, it f***ing isn't. It's a card game. It's not a sport. It is absolutely not a sport. But the Advocate General, Maciej Szpunar, and I doubt I pronounced that correctly, describes sport as an activity requiring a certain effort to overcome a challenge or an obstacle, and which trains a certain physical or mental skill. That does not define a sport. That would make, amongst the list of sports, not just bridge, but tax evasion, parenting, urinating into a fish pond off a 30-metre-high telegraph pole. I mean, that requires physical and mental skill, and a significant obstacle and challenge. Becoming a hitman, that's not a sport. I'm not criticising it, but it's not a sport. That would make driving into London on a three-lane road at 2 a.m. whilst keeping to the 40-mile-an-hour speed limit. That would make that a sport. That the mental discipline required to do that is absolutely off the scale. And also, it would make a sport breaking wind at a funeral without anyone noticing. This is opening up an absolute can of non-sporting worms. I will tell you what sport is, Mr. Szpunar. Sport is sport. And what that is when people do something physical in competition, which, and this is the crucial defining factor, if performed in front of a crowd badly, would make that crowd go, ah! Or swear at them for ruining their weekend. That is what sport is. If you cannot ruin a spectator's weekend by being bad at it, or messing it up, it's not a real sport. Your emails now, and this email came from Devon in Montreal. On the subject of joke candidates in American politics, believe it or not, in the very serious and fully functioning American government, there is one called Vermin Supreme. He wears a large shoe on his head and has promised everyone a free pony. Have you come across this guy, Vermin Supreme?
I mean, I haven't watched professional wrestling in a while, Andy. So
In Canada, Devon continues, there's a party that was made for the Bugle, the Rhino Party. They will abolish federal debt by putting it on a Visa card and reporting it stolen. That is the kind of lateral thinking that top-level economics needs. That's pretty much how the City of London works. Also, they propose to make the Canadian climate more temperate by tapping into the natural resource of hot air in Ottawa. Zing! Take that, Canadian politics. And providing higher education by building taller schools. But, I mean, that's... pun politics surely has to be the future in this confusing, confused age. Do keep your emails coming in to hellobuglers@thebuglepodcast.com. That brings us to the close of this week's Bugle. Hari, it's been a delight to have you back on the show. Do you have any shows you'd like to plug?
I'd love to. I have some shows with my brother, show Kundabolu. It's our show, the Untitled Kundabolu Brothers Project. We'll be doing it June 27th in Brooklyn at Littlefield, and June 29th and 30th in Seattle at the Theater off Jackson. And then I'll be doing stand-up in July, July 9th in Salt Lake City at Wise Guys, July 12th in Phoenix at Stand Up Live, July 13th, through the 15th at Denver Comedy Works. And in August, I got dates in San Diego, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Burlington, Vermont. You can find them on my webpage, harikundabolu.com. And again, more realistically, Google the word Hari, H-A-R-I, in comedian, and then Google will say, did you mean? And that is likely what I meant, yes.
I'm doing Satirist for Hire at the Underbelly this Tuesday, the 20th, the following Tuesday at the Hideaway in Streatham. I'm hosting a fundraising gig for my children's primary school with Jeremy Hardy, Sophie Hagen, and Johnny the Baptist. So come along to all of those shows, all of you. The Bugle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, made possible with great support from our founding sponsors, the Knight Foundation. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.